Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cold Feet Podcast. Join our journey as we interview people in this cold plunge and we delve on the adventure of holistic health, athletic development, barefoot education, questioning the norm, and so much more. So dive in, grab a hot cocoa, and enjoy the episode.
Before we start our podcast episode, we would like to give a brief shout out to our podcast sponsors. Most shoes harm your mobility by over-restricting your foot's natural movement. With the Ursus from Barefoot Athletics, a shoe designed with minimal restrictions, your feet can move the way nature intended, so you can move with more confidence and strength in every step. Barefoot Shoes was founded by Chris Duffin, who attributes proper foot biomechanics as foundational to his success in squatting and deadlifting over 1,000 for reps. He created Barefoot Shoes to provide a minimal shoe designed for strength athletes. Go to barefoot.shoes/TBSR to check out the Ursus, and you can save 10% with the code TBSR10 to purchase the strongest minimalist shoe available. As a gym owner, I usually lift barefoot. When I can't lift barefoot, I love lifting in my barefoot shoes for both the health benefits of lifting barefoot and the increased ground feel I have in all my lifts. You don't need supplements to build muscle, lose fat, and get healthy, but the right ones can help. That's why over 350,000 fitness folk have chosen Legion. Well, that and their 100% natural products, their clinically effective ingredients and doses, and their no-hassle money-back guarantee. I've been following Michael Matthews, the CEO of Legion Athletics, journey since 2012, and I am super duper impressed with their supplements. They have a wide variety of everything from protein powders, pre-workouts, post-workouts, omega-3s, and bundles. And you can save a whooping 20% with the discount code HABER, H-A-B-E-R. So just log in to legionathletics.com, and the discount code is HABER for 20% off. Earthrunners are some of my favorite minimalist sandals. Earthrunners were created to rewild our lives in response to the typical modern domesticated lifestyle, which is causing numerous health, psychological, and social issues. Through rewilding and grounding, we aim to bring stronger, healthier, and more resilient individuals and communities back to our society. If you're not familiar with grounding is exposing your bare feet or body to the earth beneath you. And if you're unable to do that, you can ground with sandals like Earthrunners with their unique copper plug and copper laces. Grounding has a huge display of benefits such as reducing inflammation, improving sleep, and improving happiness. So you can check out Earthrunners at earthrunners.com, and you can use our discount code of TBSR10 to get 10% off. Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of the Cold Feet Podcast. Today, I'm joined by the one and only Holly Middleton, who is going to introduce herself and tell us what she does. It's going to be fascinating. We're going to dive into movement, mobility, everything about the human body today. And I'm so happy you reached out, Holly. Welcome to the show. If you can go ahead and introduce yourself.
Great. Thanks, Sean. I am Holly Middleton. I am a movement coach based in Vancouver, Canada. And what I do is I help athletic people up-level their performance by teaching them how to move better, looking at fine-tuning all the little movements that they're not aware that they may or may not be doing. And my main modality is anatomy in motion, which I think you're probably aware of, maybe your listeners are aware of, is a model of the way the body is meant to move through the gait cycle from the skeleton's perspective. And so what I do is I take my eagle eyes of 30 years as a dancer and being able to watch all those tiny little details of what's going on in your body from your feet to your head to your tips of your toes and figuring out what those little movements are that aren't happening that can up-level your performance. And as we know, a lot of things happen in our bodies through injuries and sports that we played that maybe are one-sided. And so we want to be able to unravel those patterns that we're not aware that are going on that are maybe preventing us from reaching farther in the climbing wall or being able to throw as hard as you would like, for example. And so I help people with those tiny little details that we're not aware of that help them get better. I also work on breathing patterns. So breathing in terms of being able to unravel those patterns of your breathing to help with your posture, your range of motion, and all the good things like that. So that's me in a nutshell.
Wow. Thank you so much for that intro. It kind of sounds like you're the missing puzzle piece
to what the conventional strength coach is doing in the gym, right? So he's like, he's probably squatting, heavy with them. He's probably carrying stuff. He's probably deadlifting, pushing, pulling. And you're like, hold up. There's a lot more moving intricate systems within the body other than just your muscular system and your ability to move. And I think that what happens with athletes is that they get stuck in like the push, pull, hinge motion, or if they're not strength training at all, let's say a quarterback in football or any sort of throwing sport, repetitively doing the same motion again and again of throwing without realizing how much damage it's actually putting on his body. Would that make sense?
Yeah, and most of our coaches are very, very good at what they do, but we don't have the specialties of those tiny little things that you need to be able to see. And so everyone's really good at their own thing, but they may not be good necessarily at this tiny little details that we need to have to be able to notice the little things that, especially in your feet, as you know, are foot function. If you're not able to know those tiny details of how your foot is meant to move or little discrepancies in the movement in your feet, they can cascade all the way up into your body and maybe stop you from a shoulder range of motion that you have no idea about. So that's my skill set is I am a personal trainer. I'm trained to do that. But I've decided that instead I want to specialize, really hone in on those tiny little details that really helped me when I was injured. I was a high level dancer, a national international competitor, and those tiny little details that I focused on helped me unravel injuries that I had, get me back to dancing better than I was beforehand, and also be able to do moves that were out of reach for me. Just because my coach wasn't able to see those things, he wasn't trained in those little details. I didn't know them myself. And so I just needed to be able to understand through someone else's eagle eyes what those little things were that were missing in my body that allowed me to do all of those movements that were out of reach. So we will have people around us that are really, really good at the things that they're good at. But you need somebody who can step outside of that lens and be able to see what maybe we're not trained to see. And so that's what my specialty is. It's just those little details.
Well, I think that the best coaches out there, whatever their profession is, they can be trainers, they can be coaches, they can be physical therapists, are coaches who are once athletes. Somewhere along the line, we got injured or something went wrong. And we're like, hold up, everything I learned in the gym or in school or in physical education, whatever it is, it's not working for me. So let me start exploring my own thing. And I've seen this on my podcast. I've seen this in the weight room. I've seen this in the field. I've seen this in where I teach is that we've come to realize that the conventional way or the mainstream way is not working, and we start like layering stuff together, piecing those puzzle pieces together. We discover new things, whether it's barefoot, whether it's mobility, whether it's breath work, whether it's soft tissue work, whether it's cold exposure, and we puzzle pieces together to create this new Holly V2 kind of thing, so our athletes can be the best versions of ourselves. When you say all these like little moving parts, I presume you're referring to mobility training. Is that correct?
Yeah. So it's biomechanics. Mm. So it's being able to coordinate all of the parts moving together. So sometimes what happens is when you, for example, if you sprain your ankle, you don't want to move into that injury space again. You don't want to be moving into the place that hurts. You're avoiding that. Your nervous system is stopping you from doing that. So what happens is that you end up with completely eliminating the ability to move into certain shapes in your body because your nervous system has deleted them from your awareness. Because last time that was bad. Mm. That really hurt last time. And it was a bad experience and it distracted you from being yourself. For getting your stuff done in your day. And so your nervous system just deletes those from your awareness that you can even make those shapes. Or if you try to make those shapes, it screams at you and says, don't ever do that again. And so what happens is then we lose the ability to make certain shapes that are moves that give us power and being able to do certain things that we want on the field or wherever your sport is. And so we want to bring back a sense of safety for your body that I can move into that space of that old injury and it's not bad anymore. And in fact, being able to do that is actually a benefit for the whole body. And so what I do is I move you into those spaces that are missing, show your nervous system this is a safe environment, that it's okay to make that shape, and then help you make that shape throughout your body. So when you go into that ankle sprain shape, I put you into that shape get all of the other parts of your body making those movements together. So it coordinates and uses it powerfully instead of, well, if we can't make that shape, then we're going to try to make another shape. That's not, it's going to get the job done, but it's not going to be the best, most efficient thing that you can do. And so that's what my work does is it's holistic. It's the whole body. Mm. Can you pronate your foot and use all of the joints throughout your body to pronate your body? Not just your foot. And those are the little things that, like you say, are those things you were listing off, cold exposure, all those different things. Those are old things, right? They're things that we've known for centuries, but we're going back to old things. And biomechanics is old things. It's this joint was put together like this. So let's let this joint do that. And then what does the whole body do in response to that joint? So it's really just going back to first principles, right? It's just going back to the basics. And a lot of people don't necessarily like those basics. Athletes know it's super important to work on basics, but a lot of people will skip over that. They want to do the fun stuff, the fancy stuff. But the better you are at those basic things, the better you are at the big things too.
So far, you had two such powerful one-liners that I kind of want to cut this up and take them and post them. The first one was you explained why the body in just like 15 seconds, people do hour lectures in this. You explained why the body stops wanting to move a joint when it gets injured. And you explained it so well. You just articulated it how the body gets an ouchie and it says, please don't move me in that way again. So it shuts down the nervous system. I find that super fascinating because I was always curious, if someone breaks their bone, you know, hopefully it won't happen to us, or if someone sprains a joint or sprains a ligament, it would make sense that their body shuts down the nervous system so they don't move that broken bone or ligament. What if someone just gets like a sharp bruise, like or like a sharp, acute hit to a bone or joint? Even if there's no physical damage, will the body still shut down the nervous system?
Well, your body is always going to protect yourself from something. So if you ever stubbed your toe really badly and then hobbled around the rest of the day, right? So things like that, you're going to adapt and move around in a way after stubbing your toe. You're going to be hobbling for a while. And if you do 10,000 steps like that, that becomes a new pattern. That becomes a new way of moving. So even though you think, oh, well, you know, I did that, you know, I got hit really hard and, I was careful with it for a little while. That's changed, maybe not for the long term, but it's changed you for a little while, maybe a few weeks in how you're willing to, like, for example, if you get an injection, right? Like if you get a needle in your arm is sore, then you're going to be a little tender there and you're not going to move your arm the same way. You don't want to load those muscles for a few days. And so those sorts of things will definitely change your movements, but maybe not for the long term as much as an injury where, like, if you break a bone and you're in a cast or you're hobbling around, you're using 6 weeks. You've walked in a different way. That's going to be a big impact compared to, oh, I just had to be careful with this muscle for a few days because I got banged pretty hard. So it's maybe not going to impact you for quite as long, but it is definitely going to change how you move for a little while.
That's really cool because what I'm understanding from what you're saying is that it's not so much the initial nervous system shutdown that affects our body, it's the overcompensation of the rest of the body. And after spending hours or days or even months in the case of a cast in this compensated gait cycle or constant compensated movement, that's what affects our body negatively, which is just like mind-blowing for most people because I think people just associate injury with like, oh, I got injured, my body's weak, whatever. But it's not whatever because as you and me know, if I can continue manipulating my body to move even while injured, then my recovery will be faster. And if I can still, like I remember when I got injured in my tackle football days, the first thing the physical therapist would say is stop limping. Don't limp when you walk. And it's genius because if I can walk without a limp, even if I have to load my ankle a little bit more, or even if I have to walk with crutches so I don't have to limp, I'm regressing the joint, but I'm not affecting my gait patterns negatively. The second thing you said, which I really liked, and it's like a 6-second one-liner, is stop trying new stuff. Go back to the old stuff. Move in a full range of motion. Lift heavy things. Focus on your breath. Expose yourself to extremes, cold and heat temperatures. And before ice baths and cold plunge freezer high-tech setups became popular, people went into the frozen river because that's what they had to do to catch fish. And people were in the sunshine in midday because that's the heat in the desert. So like everything we have in this, I know I'm like tangenting a bit, but everything we have in this modern day is just a poor or not so poor substitute for what we used to have to do that was part of life. Just go back to the olden days, man. It was a much better time then, or woman.
Well, that's true. That's true as well. But also we have some amazing modalities these days, like NKT and PDTR and things where we're starting to understand the nervous system mm-hmm. and the effects of trauma on the different things that are going on in our bodies. And all of that stuff wasn't understood before. And mm-hmm. I agree that we can go back to all of the old things that worked for generations mm-hmm. and are great. But there's also these new things of our new understanding of the impacts of injury, for example, as we were just talking about. How injuries change how you move. We didn't really mm-hmm. think about any of that kind of thing. But I'm sure that in the past, if you would have broken your arm or sprained your ankle, there would have been other strategies we would have had to heal ourselves, to get better, and to move back, go back to moving the way we did without having a chiropractor or a biomechanics expert to look at us. You got to figure out with the tools that you have on hand. And mm-hmm. a lot of people nowadays, and this is one thing that I wish we had more of, was that people will go to a practitioner thinking that only a practitioner can heal you and get you mm-hmm. better. But in fact, what happens is that if you're able to take the curiosity and figure out, you know, oh, so my left knee doesn't hurt, but my right knee does. So what's my left knee doing that my right knee isn't, right? You have that tool set in your body if you want to take the time to sort that out. So if you want to say your left knee isn't hurting and your right knee is, that maybe your left knee is the teacher and your right knee is the student. And you can try to figure out for yourself why it is that one knee is hurting and the other isn't. Sometimes we say it's aging. Oh, my knees are old. Well, they're the same age, but only one hurts. So why is that? Right. And like you were saying, that we tend to overcompensate in things after injuries. But I think what's happening is that your body is just always super efficient. It is always doing its best to get you around. If you sprained your ankle and a certain movement is not available, we don't just stop walking. We find another way. Right? We always troubleshoot around that. And so the strategy your body comes up with is as most efficient as it can possibly be when you've deleted a movement from its ability to use that. So we realize that our bodies are always as efficient as possible. We like to say, oh, we're compensating, we're, you know, but your body is doing the best that it can all the time. And so, you know, we're always talking about, oh, bad movement patterns, this and that, but your body is actually doing really, really well. Trying to get stuff done when it's not allowed to do stuff, either because we've told it knees shouldn't do that, or tall women shouldn't stand like that, right? I've had a lot of people like this. Oh, I was told as a kid not to stand like this. I was told as a kid not to do this. And so there's things that we're told about our bodies, and then there's things that our bodies decide not to do. So we want to unravel all of those things. Mm. Why is it that you stand like that? Did you realize that, right? Just these little bits of awareness that someone who has a skill set like myself, I can teach you how to try to sort those things out in your body. You're like, why do I throw like that? Why do I breathe like that? Mm. And we're just not aware of them because your body just wants to keep getting stuff done. It doesn't want to focus on the minute details of every little thing. It would be super distracting if mm-hmm. you're paying attention to your big toe all the time or paying attention to your hip flexion all the time. So we want to say your bodies are doing great with the parameters we give them, but we want to start giving them more options. And so that's what the work that I do does is shows you the buffet of movements available to you and said, did you realize there's more than just the dessert buffet available? All these other buffets are open. You can use all of them to move, but we want you to be aware that they are available to you. And then how you can use those new movements with the whole rest of your body to be more efficient, more powerful, faster, stronger, all those things that you want to be. Because you don't realize there's a little bit left on the table that you can be able to use. You're just not aware it's there. And the people around you maybe haven't seen, maybe they're not aware of foot function and its impact on the rest of the body. Maybe they haven't trained in breathing patterns. They're not sure about those things. Or they don't realize that dental work caused your jaw to be over to one side. And that's going to impact things all the way down the chain. So it's just those little details.
So to summarize what you said in the past few minutes, your body is not inherently overcompensating. Your body is optimizing whatever tools it currently has in its arsenal. And if I can add more tools to my arsenal, then I'll be able to compensate accordingly. Would that about sum it up?
Yeah, I think that we use a lot of negative words about our body. I can't, my body won't.
Correct.
Compensating when in fact your body is super, super clever and it's sorting things out constantly for you. You know, like you said, if you bump your arm and it hurts, your body still gets stuff done. It's so clever. It's still figuring things out for you. It's still reminding you that that hurts. So don't bump it again, right? Mm-hmm. It's doing all these amazing things for you constantly without your awareness. So I'm hoping that people will start talking more positively about their body and realizing that there's more potential there you don't even realize that you have, and how liberating it is when you bring back those movements that you didn't even know were deleted. Like people that work with me, they're like, I had no idea my body was doing this. Mm-hmm. I had no idea I had more in me. And there is more in you if you just want to take the time to look and find where it is.
Well, that's interesting that you said about the like negative connotations, because there's a very big sports psychology realm or the psyche of the body. So what we have here in my gym, which I run here in Jerusalem, is we have a big sign. I'll send you this post after, where all the negative words or statements that people could say in the gym are subbed out. So if someone says, I can't, it's subbed out for I'll rest and try again. If someone says, I'm weak, it's subbed out for I'm not strong yet. And not only is it nice to take care of your body, but it actually physiologically affects your performance. So if someone's, you know, going in for that heavy squat or the heavy bench press or just something challenging, and if during the set they say, I can't, I say, okay, cool, put the bar down. You just, and they're like, what do you mean? I said, you just told your body you can't. Why in the world would your body let you continue? And I say, good, let's put the bar down. Let's reset. Let's reset our mental state. Hey, this is heavy, but let me try again. And it totally changes people's perspective. And there's empty lines in the bottom of this paper too. So if someone says something negative, I could say, hey, you have to write it. It's like the wall of shame, but the positive wall of shame. You have a statement. You have a statement. I'll take a picture of it for you after. You have a statement to write in the wall, and you have to sub it out for something positive. I really want to dive into mobility because I think we're touching upon the concept, and I really want to refine it and explain it to our audience. So first of all mobility, and you're touching upon this a lot, has to be done intentfully. If someone just goes around like waves their arms around, it's not really, or says, okay, I'm stretching, you know, I'm doing my stretching for the day to make me feel better, recover from injury, it's not going to really help them recover. So can we define what mobility training is, or moving the body in the full range of motion? This you spoke to me over the DMs and Instagram. How does mobility affect the joints? How does it improve our range of motion? How does it grant neural access to these areas that we've never accessed before? And how can we define mobility in like one precise 10 second statement, how it differs from people get confused between static stretching and yoga and all sorts of different movement based practices?
Sure. So from my perspective, the mobility we're looking for is access to the joints when we need to use them. So when you're just walking down the street, we use very little of that range of motion in our bodies, because we're just using essentially the energy that we've stored, and we're just bringing it back. You know, we're being efficient with the use of the energy stored in the tissues as you go. So we use very little of the range of motion just day to day. But then when you go to do these more athletic movements, you're having to go through bigger ranges of motion with power, with strength, with more momentum. And so what we want to do is be able to get ourselves into a place where we can access all of the joints in each plane of motion when we need it. And not only that we can access it, but it can work with all of the other parts of our body coordinated together the way it's designed to, the way our joints are put together to work. So our joints are put together to make certain movements happen, which then knocks on with the next joint and the next joint and the next joint to cause a cascade of certain types of movements to happen. And if you've had an injury and your body says, yeah, we're not going to rotate that joint anymore, something else has to do that for it instead. And so we end up moving some joints too much and some joints too little without us knowing that. So what we want to do is be able to get into each of the movements in each of the joints when required, because we've practiced that in our warm-ups. You've prepared, if you're going to do a deadlift, you've practiced the sorts of movements before loading yourself up, for example. As a dancer, I would have done dynamic types of movements, practicing the kinds of movements I'm going to get into before I do them. And so we want to be able to not only warm our body up to prepare for those types of movements, but do the practice of getting back into fully using all of the range of motion in your joints in a mindful, focused way without all the momentum and load and power and all the things behind it. So that would be being able to notice when in your own body you're missing a movement and in a certain joint, and being able to do that movement and coordinate all the joints above and below to help you achieve that movement together. So it's about, okay, so when I bend my knee, am I really bending my knee, or am I doing it from my ankle or my lower back? Am I able to get all of the joints that are surrounding that joint to participate in the movement that I'm doing? Can I get them all to play together so that I can get this movement more efficient? So it's aligned, it's stacked, it's powerful, because now we're able to get everything coordinating together instead of something doing too much work and something not doing enough work. And so my focus on mobility is more about coordinating holistically the whole body. Is everything moving as it's designed to move to make this the best possible movement I can make it? And so that would be my focus on mobility is everything moving as it's supposed to? Are they coordinating as one unit? So we're all pushing together, right? We're all doing the thing together. We're all pulling our own weight rather than some things doing too much and other things doing too little. And so that's different from other people's focus on what they would do for mobility. I don't give stretches. I give drills that help you be aware of what isn't moving and help all those things come together online together so that they're getting the movements that we want to get done, and rewiring the awareness of your brain that that part exists and that part can do that movement. And taking away those deleted parts, the bugs in the system. Being able to remind your body that that mobility is accessible. And I've had a story for myself. The same thing happened. I was working on my foot function, and I was a salsa dancer. So we dance in 3 or 4 inch heels. I was in a performance and I was really giving it. And I went to a shape where I would have twisted my ankle, and I'm not prone to twisting my ankle. I don't think I ever have, but I'd been practicing my supinations so I can get into and out of my full supination. So I went into a potential ankle sprain, and my body immediately popped me back into a neutral position in my heel because I practiced it. I had gone to full range of motion in my heel, and before my awareness, before I even knew what happened, my foot was back into neutral in a performance because I practiced it. Rather than, oh, I've never been into that shape before, that's bad. And in a game setting, in a performance setting, you can't right yourself. You can't put yourself back because you haven't practiced that. And you know, playing sports, no two throws are the same. No two passes are the same. No two movements are the same. And so we need to be able to let your body do all the weird and wonderful things it might have to do that you can't even come up with, you know, that you can't practice, because you never know what that scenario is going to be until you find yourself in it. And so being able to know that your body, you can trust your body because it can get into weird and wonderful shapes and not break. That's mobility to me, that you can do all the things you need to do when you need to, and not worry that you can get out of it safely.
Well, we really share principles of training and training philosophy. A lot of times, first of all, when it comes to sport-specific training, I believe that the only real sport-specific training is the sport itself, because as you said before, there's only so much funky things we could do on the field or gym until you throw really, really weird while the guy's rushing into your shoulder and you're like, oh, I can handle that. So, but with that being said, we're constantly doing funky stuff on the field, whether it's, you know, deaccelerating at different angles and, you know, moving with sleds and weird, like backward zigzagging crossover. Like, what are you doing, Sean? And I'm like, guys, when you get to the field, your body's going to do even weirder stuff. You just don't know. So by being intentional now, by being intentful, like, wait, am I doing it right? Is my hip working correctly? Is my knee, you know, doing what it's supposed to do? When you get to the field, your body can kind of do it on automatic, and your body and confidence increases. I really like how you speak about mobility in a, this is what it's supposed to be doing correctly. Like being hyperflexible, for example, is an example where mobility is not a very, very useful tool. when you spoke in the beginning about walking, so I was envisioning as you said walking, it's like, what's moving? All right, so my ankle, hip, and knee are moving a bit. Maybe my wrists and elbows are, you know, waving around a bit. But like, if my neck is wobbling while I'm walking, then I'll have a headache, or I'll have trap pain. And so I was thinking, like, you don't define mobility just as the fact that I can lift my hands overhead. You define mobility as, do I need to lift my hands overhead now? And am I able to when my overhead mobility is being summoned? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So can you get into those shapes that you need to get into without your body freaking out because it's not practiced that? Or you can get into a creative position that you've never practiced before and your body's like, well, we can figure it out. So you can trust that your body can do those weird things on the field and not break is essentially what my goal is, that you can do whatever you need to do and you can trust that you can do it.
Pain-free. I want to finish off with this question. My question is like this. If I'm lacking mobility, right? So let's say I'm going overhead and my right arm just doesn't want to go. You know, I want to do a pull-up or I want to throw something or catch something. When I start doing the mobility training, what physiologically happens in the joint or muscle or bone, ligament, tendon, and all the moving parts there that allows me to access nerves that allows me to access this new range of motion?
Well, there's a whole variety of things. Some of those are out of my scope of practice, but some of them are for physiotherapists to answer. But some of it is that the bones themselves just won't glide past one another. They can get stuck. So if you can't get your range of motion over top of your head, sometimes it's that your rib cage position isn't letting you glide. Your scap may be stuck somewhere. It can be something all the way down to, for example, if it's the right arm overhead. So it would be, you can't supinate that foot on that side. So the position of your heel or your forefoot can be in a position where you just can't swing your arm forward and be able to be in that supinated position. So it can be somewhere anywhere in the body, but I would start with what's the joint attached to? So for example, in your rib cage, if you're having trouble getting your rib cage into a good position, maybe your breathing patterns, you've created a breathing pattern to manage something that's happened in your life, that maybe your rib cage, your ribs can't drop down and in, and so you can't get your arm overhead. You know, it can be something where you're thinking, oh, it's in the shoulder itself, but it could be something just a little bit further away. It could be your jaw is pushed to the side because you got hit, you had a car accident, you had dental work where you chewed on one side for a while. It could be any number of things. So you want to start in the joint and just see, is it where it's meant to be? And then see if there are places around there that maybe you can remember in your injury history that may be putting you in a position where it just simply those bones won't go past one another. And so we want to help them find where their center is and then being able to move a little bit better. So that's where that eagle eye comes in. So, or your own self figuring out, oh, okay, that's right. I had that injury to that rib. So that might explain why that's happening.
So you're saying that a large reason why our joints don't want to move a certain way is due to injury / our bones don't have enough space in the joint to move in the correct manner, and that's creating a physical blockage?
It's the resting position of the bones. Mm-hmm. So if the bones are not resting, so everything is in the anatomical sort of neutral position, then they're going to bump up against each other. Mm. So you can move through some range of motion, but as you put your arm overhead, at some point, the bones are just going to bump into each other and stop. Right. You're going to feel a bony stop. So it's not a stretch, but it's like blocked.
Right. Right.
And so that would suggest that you're missing some range of motion because the bones that are surrounding it are just not letting it go.
Mm. So I found for that type of blockage, I found banded distractions quite useful. Like a lot of times, you know, placing a band by the ankle joint to the shoulder joint, which can sometimes create a little more space in the joint itself and allow the bones that are smushing against each other to move. But I'm more curious about, so assuming that I can't fix it without surgical intervention or assuming I don't want to override with a medical system, what do I do? Like, how do I access that new range? Is it neural? Do eventually the bones unstick themselves?
Yeah. So if it's because of your resting position, because of your body's finding its most efficient way to stand at rest, if that's why it is, then you want to start being able to teach it the full range of motion in all of the joints around it so that it can find that center is actually the real center rather than your sort of wonky center. So if you have a wonky center and that's where your brain says that's neutral and it isn't actually in your anatomical center, then things aren't going to glide well. So you want to be able to teach it its full range of motion so then it finds, oh, center is actually center. And then it can start moving those joints. And so that's what all anatomy and motion, that's why the courses are called Finding Center. Because it's to teach your body the full range of motion all the way to the right and all the way to the left. So it knows that full range and then it goes, oh, here's where neutral is. Here's where the center is. Rather than my wonky, slightly rotated to the right type of center. And so that's what it does is teaches your body where all of its availability is in that mobility to put you back into where your center is in your brain. Your brain knows where that is. And that then opens up all of the other joints around you so that all those other joints can move as they're intended to move.
I really like how you gave the example of dental work, because I don't think people are very, this day and age, very savvy to jump to the, you know, all right, let's just do surgery. Let's just chop off the limb. Let's just do this. People don't realize that a doctor, even though his intentions may be, you know, pure, he wants to save the life, save the organ, save the limb, they're physically overriding our body's natural capacity. So our body has a certain natural capacity to heal, and our body has a certain way of moving and, you know, I don't want to use the word compensating anymore, but our body has its own methods. And the doctor slash dentist slash even physical therapist may be overriding what the body wants to do. And the second you start putting, you know, bolts and nails in the bone, unless it's a situation where the body cannot restore itself through movement and, you know, and therapy and whatever it may be, you're overriding the body's natural ability. And unlike an issue which can be fixed through mobility or range of motion stuff or strength, once there's bolts and nails in there, unless they're taken out, the body can't restore itself. So it's like, well, yeah. Go ahead.
I think the reason why doctors do that is because people want the quick fix these days.
Correct.
Don't want to do the work. They don't want, because of the way our lives are structured, you have to be efficient. You have to be at work. You have to do stuff. And so you're not allowed to slow down and do things and figure things out and let things heal on their own timeline, because and that's why doctors suggest that, is because everyone comes in and says, I want it fixed now because I have to do this and this and this. And so the doctors give people what they're asking for. And so they just get good at giving what we're asking for rather than all the other options, because those other options are rarely asked for. Very few people actually want to do the work of helping themselves get better. And that's so unfortunate, because there's so much potential for us to do it if it's something we want to do. And that's one thing I wish that would happen, is people would realize that these things can be fixed. These things can be changed if you want to spend the time to do it. But most people just are, and you're handed orthotics, or you're handed a pill, or you're given an injection or suggested a surgery, because most people just want it done. They want it gone. They want it fixed, even if it's not really fixed. It's just the pain is gone. I don't have to deal with it anymore. And so if only people would realize that there's other ways of doing it. It might take more energy, more focus, it might be uncomfortable, but you can. But that's just that doctors give you the thing that most people are asking for. And so they specialize in just being good at giving people what they're asking for.
Wow, that's a great final message to finish the podcast with. Athletes and coaches out there, next time you hopefully don't get hurt, but if you do, think twice about what long-lasting decision you will be doing to your body when you say yes to the next surgery. Holly, thanks so much for coming on the show. We have just about a minute left. Can you tell us where we can find you on Instagram, Facebook, online website, online programs,
all the places?
Yeah.
I'm at flowmovement.ca, so that's the Canadian .ca. I'm on Instagram, Flow Movement Therapy. You can find me on YouTube. I have lots of tutorials there as well, as you can get a sense of my thought processes and my exercises, and so that would be the best place to find me.
Wow. So Holly, thank you so much for having you on the show. I just got off an IG live and now I'm on the podcast, and I learned a lot in this past 40 minutes, and I've already memorized like 3 or 4 of one-liners. You're really a gemstone of knowledge. I think that's the right way to say it. And it's super cool to connect with like-minded people around the world, one in Canada, one in Israel. So thanks so much for coming in the episode, and we'll pop this episode up on Spotify, and have an amazing weekend.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yes, absolutely. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey.
I'm Sean, and I'm the Barefoot Athlete, and I want to welcome you on this six-week Barefoot Transition course. 2.5 years ago, we started developing this course, and we wanted it to be 12 months long. Why 12 months? Because we felt that if you just spent dozens of years in cushioned shoes, you can't transition that quickly. Realizing that 12 months is not sustainable, we shortened it to 6 weeks. And in these 6 weeks, you're going to dive into foot, knee, ankle, hip, shoulder mobility. You're going to dive into calf, ankle, knee, hip strengthening. You're going to learn how to take care of your feet, how to release them with tons of soft tissue work. After the first phase is over, after the 3 weeks are done, your pain is gone. Your knees, your hips, your feet are feeling great, ready to rumble. Move on to the advanced stage. We learn how to land. We learn how to jump. We learn how to produce force and absorb force. Every single week is action-packed with play, fun, challenges to challenge yourself, your friends, your loved ones, and your community. Tons of strengthening, tons of footwork, and we can guarantee you that in 6 weeks' time, you will be much, much closer to being able to fully love life and live life in minimalist footwear. And the best part of it all, you're not limited to 6 weeks. So if you want to go back and repeat a phase, you're more than welcome to. So let's go, come along, and enjoy the course.